The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can. Well, to do it then. Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along, Johnny Ward here, standing in for whoever it is tonight that couldn't show up, with Damien Delaney, whose legion of fans have been texting in all evening saying that he's the best thing ever to come to Irish punditry. Damien, you're working
I could imagine after what I said there about the Dubs, there's an awful lot of Dublin stuff coming in there.
Well, that hasn't come through the filter anyway, so they must have put that in the cold storage. We'll have Andy Mitten on in due course, going to discuss Manchester United's resurgence, which has involved victories over Tottenham Hotspur, who are in action at the moment in Munich, losing 2-1. And also Manchester City, who they beat last weekend. Manchester City did the job tonight, winning in the Champions League. Still no sign of Troy Parrott. We're in, 50 minutes gone in Munich. Spurs have been under the cosh for the little bit of that I've seen of the game. It's been mainly Munich, Damo, hasn't it?
Yeah, first half was actually a really good game of football. Really, Spurs, it wasn't as one-sided as what the first 5 minutes of the second half has been. Spurs was given as good in terms of like possession and pressing and winning the ball back, and definitely competed. Byrne had a host of chances. They hit the post a couple of times. Kingsley Coman went off with what looked like an absolutely horrific knee injury.
Yeah, how could you explain that? He kind of went over on his ankle and then
he twisted his ankle. It was his knee.
Yeah,
he was running, and as he planted his left foot, the whole thing just buckled, and he actually sprung up into the air from the recoil of it. Basically, that didn't look good at all. I mean, immediately he just was just lying there. He knew straight away he's ruptured something there. Definitely.
What's the worst injury you ever got?
I've done my ankles a few times.
Yeah, nothing too bad.
A few serious ones and that, like, but nothing too, nothing that was as, not a 9-monther. Like, it looks like Kingsley Coman could well be facing down the barrel of maybe 6 months, but it didn't look great, to be honest. Yeah.
There was an unfortunate moment today when the PFAI team were playing in, I think, like Rochdale or Rotherham, or Dan McDonald of the show was there, but they were playing playing an under 23 side or something like that. But it's one of these games. It's quite interesting because they're on the market. They want a club, so they're playing with the PFAI squad anyway. Rochdale under 23s took them on today, and Sean Boyd, who was at Shamrock Rovers, scored against Bowes in the Derby game not that long ago. He's trying to get a club, and he's taken off with what looked a pretty bad injury today in a game which he's basically trying to be on the shop window, and you're just like. Yeah, a knee injury left the pitch in agony.
It's not, especially when you're in their situation where you're kind of hoping to find work, and now you could be, forking out if you're on rehab. So that's not ideal for him. Hopefully it's not as bad as what we think it may be. Just getting a shot there, Troy Parrott on the bench.
He looks like he's ready. He looked cold.
I think there's a couple of subs, a couple of young lads there are already kind of tracksuit bottoms off, shin pads on. So I don't know if they've been told at some point at half time, you're coming on and don't keep me waiting, so make sure you're ready.
It's
not normal on a cold night in Germany. There, you normally be wrapped up pretty well, but he still has his big coat on him. But he's in his Nixon socks with his pads on, so he was hoping.
Indeed, thanks to the comments in about the Tommy Barrett interview. Tommy was in earlier to discuss the demise of Limerick FC. Pat in Galway has texted in, perhaps soccer and rugby should combine and share Thomond Park, which by all accounts is struggling a little due to its size. People like Tommy Barrett should be given the reins to restructure the FAI from the ground up. I've been to two of the Limerick grounds. They've played Markets Field and Rathbann. And Rathbann is not ideal for football of that level. Haven't been to Thomond, but when they played in Thomond, it was clear that the pitch was, or this facility was far too big for the crowds that Limerick were getting. That didn't work. And then I went to Markets Field and I loved it. It's like a 5 minute walk from the train station. It has a ground with a bit of history. And I don't think Markets Field was the issue. There's a bit of talk about that they owed a lot of rent and they owed money all over the place. But I was getting information tonight, Damo. I don't know what your opinion on this is now, that I was told by one of the members of the First Division Alliance, so to speak, that the First Division Alliance clubs will not allow Shamrock Rovers B into the First Division next season. They're going to veto it and basically they're not going to support it as it is, whereas Shamrock Rovers B still think they might happen. But what's your opinion on that, a B team filling the 10th team in the First Division potentially next season? They were in it a few years ago for, I think, one season.
I don't think it's a terrible idea.
I'm with you.
I really don't. I don't think, you know, there's nothing sticks out there that makes me think, no, that's awful, because you're not going to be stunting anyone's development. It's not like there's a host of teams waiting to take up that spot. If it's vacant and it's going to get filled by, I don't know, maybe a Munster senior league team or a Leinster senior league team that has aspirations, and they're going to come in and take 5 years to kind of get up to speed. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I really don't. You know, Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers have the two best squads in the country. They probably have a surplus of players. They probably have fantastic academies. I know Rovers do, and I'm presuming Dundalk do as well. So I wouldn't be massively opposed to that idea at all.
Yeah, there's a story that goes round about me when I was playing at home for Shiven Rovers, where apparently I asked the coach, why do you keep playing me on the B team? Because he goes, because we don't have a C team. But it's not actually true. But good to see Shawnee Maguire back in the goals, lads. Surely an option to lead the line for Stephen Kinney's Ireland. So Callum O'Dowda scored last night. Shawnee Maguire scored last night. James McLean scored last night in the Championship.
Yeah.
I was looking at it earlier. It's such a basket case of a division. Like, the gap between possibly being relegated and finishing sixth is not that high at all. Like,
great. It's the best division in Europe, I think. I think it's absolutely fabulous. I know it's come on leaps and bounds since the last time I played in it, but it's always kind of been the same. You know, everybody is kind of in and around each other, string three or four results together, and all of a sudden you're looking at promotion.
Yeah, 46 games or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's a great division. It's a real test of your mettle. I mean, it really is, and it almost becomes a survival of the fittest. Once you get kind of into February in that, everybody goes into survival mode, and it's literally just, hang on, can we stay in games, let's nick wins, and it doesn't matter, aesthetics go out the window, just win, you know, because it is so taxing on the players. They have to put in so much in terms of training, travel, and playing as well twice a week.
We want to talk a bit of Ancelotti now. He was sacked by Napoli last night, which kind of followed a fairly wobbly run. Obviously, they won 4-0 over Genk and qualifying for the next stage of the last 16. But Ancelotti was left. He said, obviously, after the game, resignation. I've never resigned in my life and I never will. My future, the team management will make its assessment. But in any event, Ancelotti is gone, which inevitably entailed links with Everton and Arsenal. What do you make of this?
Well, Ancelotti didn't get sacked for footballing reasons. There was an awful lot going on behind the scenes there at Napoli. There was a split between the owner and the players, and I think it was Insigne was singled out for finding an astronomical amount of money. The whole squad was fined 25% of a week's wages or something around that. And Ancelotti sided with the players, which is, you know, what any player would want, you know, when the players are having a battle with the owner. They'd love to have the manager on the side because it strengthens their case. Obviously, he's paid the price for that with his sacking.
Double with Chelsea, we're going back 9 years, and then obviously Bayern and Napoli. If you're basing it on the two games Liverpool played against Napoli this year, I thought they were really well set up. Like, Liverpool were poor really in both games. They couldn't get going. He's 60 years of age, and you'd imagine he would fancy...
He definitely, listen, he's still working, and he was fired for non-footballing reasons, so I could imagine he still has the hunger, and he just said he's never resigned in his life. I couldn't imagine that guy retiring. Everton's a non-starter for me. He's not going there.
I mean, I wouldn't have thought so.
I mean, not in a million years. I mean, that club is nowhere near ready to be competitive to the level Ancelotti would look.
Am I missing a complete trick here, though? Rafa Benitez was on Sky the other night for the Arsenal-West Ham game, and I could only see that he was on. I didn't really hear what he was saying, or if he was even asked. Why aren't Arsenal all over? What do they think they are?
Right, because he's a very defensive manager. Right?
Is he?
He is, yeah. He
played against Rafa coach teams?
Probably have at some stage, yeah. He's a cautious coach. Because I don't like labeling him defensive, because there's nothing wrong with being defensive if you're counter-attacking whatever, but he's cautious. He hedges his, you know, plays percentages, and if you understand what I mean. He will never go out and grab games with his scruff and neck and go and do something, and that's what Arsenal need. Arsenal need someone to grab that football club, turn it around and send it in the right direction, and he's not the man, you know. I think Everton might not be a bad shout for him.
I don't think he'd take that job.
Okay, but Everton actually are in danger of being relegated, right? I mean, we're into Christmas now, and they're well in the mix.
Very much.
I mean, they need saving, I think, because they can't go on and I know they were talking about that Pereira guy out of China. They can't go and bring him in, because he's a guy that's going to bring ideas with him and want money in the January transfer window. And he's going to need 2 months. And by the time that experiment whether it's worked or not, you're February, March, and you're still in relegation, then you're every chance you're going to go down. So they don't need that. They need a David Moyes stopgap, getting to the end of the season, and then reassess it in the summer.
Yeah, the stats in the Spurs game are pretty staggering. 17 shots to 4. So it's kind of, I know this is a bit of a dead rubber. Well, it is a dead rubber, but you know, Spurs would still want to be shown a little bit more from some of their fringe players.
I think Sessegnon's been, I've been watching, I think
scored a lovely goal.
Sessegnon's been very good. They've been bright. Kyle Walker-Peters been very good. I know he's been under a lot of pressure, and he has been stretched at times, and he's been left in 2v1 situations, and it doesn't look like it's a great night for him, but he's coped admirably. I think he's done ever so well where he's been. I think Eric Dier has been a solid presence in the middle of the park. He hasn't moved much though, but you can see his strength and his height is something that I think Jose will definitely be impressed with. Eriksen's flitting in and out of the game. It looks like he's made his mind up when he's told Jose he's leaving and he's probably going to go in January. He definitely isn't killing himself or risking a potential injury.
Yeah, what's your take on that as a former player? Because he's obviously been paid handsomely by Tottenham, and if what you're saying is true, he's kind of half-hearted in his attempts tonight, yeah. Albeit in a game that doesn't matter. And he's been playing okay, in fairness, since Jose came in. But like, he's employed to do his job on the pitch for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I know, but he will look at that from the perspective of he did his job and he should have been given a new contract. Mm. So he will look at the club have let him down. And then the club probably potentially said they were going to sell him, so he will look that they've let him down. So if he's going, and Jose has asked him to help out and do what he can, he's doing what he can, but he's not going to pull up trees for it, you know.
What surprised me about it was when, this is just an affront to decency. Two Tottenham players are coming on, neither of them Troy Parrott.
One of them
sat down again.
Yeah, it's obviously Son is one of them. The other one, I'm not sure he is. He looks probably Troy Parrott's age group. But look, I don't know what he is. He could be a defender. He could be...
Jose. So on Eriksen, like Eriksen in Lansdowne Road for the Ireland game was miles off it.
He's not. Yeah, I think he looks like he's protecting himself from injury.
Do you think that's what it is?
100%. Otherwise, if he picks up a long-term injury, now he's unemployed. His career's over, you know.
Playing for his native country against Ireland again,
I still think he's got his job to worry about. If he's made that known, then Jose has a right not to pick him. Mm. You know, I mean, I could imagine him saying, I'm going to go in January, and yes, I will play, but, you know, if you need me to play, I'll be a part of it, and I'll be a good teammate, and I'll be the best I possibly can, but my head's left the building. My soul's left the building.
That's quite profound. Bayern on the attack here, play the ball beautifully out from the back. Could make it three, good save. Remember Kev Kilbane saying he regretted turning down Liverpool earlier in his career? Any club Damo regrets not joining? And that's from Psycho Pete in Trim. Like, normally you don't call yourself psycho, because it's not necessarily a term of endearment, but Pete's obviously happy enough.
There's definitely not been a club that I've regretted not joining. Probably been a club I regretted joining.
Did we mention that?
No.
Come on, Damo.
No.
Watford United, Cork City.
No, Jesus. No, in England.
Ipswich Town. I plead the fifth.
Yeah. No, nothing like that for me. I wasn't...
I'd love to talk to you about the Irish international team for the considerable future, but tonight may not be the night, but maybe in the near future. I think we're on a similar wavelength with regard to Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, I mean...
You got to hope anyway.
Yeah, I think he's obviously going to come in, and I think it's time we try it in a different way, and I think he's the man to get us down that road, you know?
Briefly, the under 21 lads, have you seen much of the 21s? What have you made of them?
I've watched a little bit of the Irish underage setup. You know, I watched a little bit of Colly O'Brien's team.
Colly down another Cork lad.
Yeah, there's definitely patterns emerging with the underage teams. You could tell that
from team to team, or
you can tell that the coaches have been coached. If you understand what I'm saying, they've been told to implement a way, but they've been told this is what we're going for. Mm. Now you can work your own way within that structure, but this is what we're going for here. And you can see the patterns emerging, definitely, and it's just a case of getting that through now to the senior team.
Here's hoping. I'll just give you an update on the scores in the Champions League.
Bayern have just scored again.
Bayern have just gone 3-1 up.
Coutinho.
Demo's very on the ball tonight. Philippe Coutinho putting Bayern 3-1 up against Spurs. Hopefully now might be the time to bring on Troy Parrott, but it's not looking very likely at the moment. Club Brugge 1, Real Madrid 1, PSG 3, Galatasaray 0, Olympiacos 0, Srednes Fedza 0, Atletico Madrid 2, Lokomotiv Moscow 0, Bayer Leverkusen 0, Juventus 0. Now we will go to the ads, and after this, Andy Mitten.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Welcome back to the Football Show, and the Football Show as ever, and our football on off the ball is brought to you by Paddy Power. We're now joined by United We Stand editor Andy Mitten. How are you, Andy?
I'm fine, thanks for having me on.
Going to start with a quote that you may or may not have heard in the past. I've grown up watching so much of him and his games. He always played free. No matter where he was playing, he played free and went out there and expressed himself. When you do that, that's when you play your best football. That was Marcus Rashford, and he was talking about Cristiano Ronaldo. And the reason I bring this up is because your article in the 442 website over recent days has spoken a lot about Rashford and compared him to Ronaldo. You're getting a little bit giddy, I think.
I only compared his statistics. I don't think that he's as good as Ronaldo at the moment, but I think there are similar characteristics in the way that with Rashford, the last couple of months, I've seen a player really in form, really confident, someone who attempts the audacious, someone who gets fans off their seats. He's scoring incredible goals, most notable the one at Chelsea in the League Cup, when fans behind the goal were saying, don't try and shoot, whoa, and then it goes in. And Ronaldo's progress from 22 to 24 was rapid. He became one of the best players in the world. I'm not saying Marcus Rashford is at the moment, but he's got the talent to become a much, much better player. And when there were stories linking him to Barcelona in April, I wrote the original story there. And people laughed at it and said, he just wants a new contract, he's blah, blah, blah. It was all true. And another thing I wrote was that Pep Guardiola told a former Manchester United legend a year or two ago, the only player I would take from Manchester United is Rashford. Now, United fans haven't always been convinced by Rashford because you wouldn't really describe him as prolific. He scored 13 goals in the last couple of seasons, scored some great goals. He's been a big moment player. The best moment for Manchester United this year came in Paris when he stood up age 21 and took a penalty against Buffon, despite the PSG players trying to intimidate him. But in the last month or so, he's really coming to his own. He's scoring. I think he scored in 6 of the last 8 matches. And it coincides with the last couple of weeks with Manchester United being much, much better. Played well against Spurs. Played well against City away. And I think it's coming together for him. And Paul Scholes said of him, he's a scorer. Is he a scorer of great goals than someone who scores a lot of goals? And I think that rang true at the time. But he scored as many goals so far this season as he did in the whole of the last season and the season before that. So he's in a sweet spot at the moment.
Yeah, he's 127 games for Man United. He scored 37 goals. At that stage, Cristiano Ronaldo had scored 34. And both of those, in the majority of those games, they've been played in wide areas. But Rashford at the moment, it's almost like a late-blooming development. And just, Andy, I watched I've actually watched Man United the last 4 games by some bizarre coincidence, and couldn't recognise the team of the last 2 games against quality opposition from the 2 that played against Villa and Sheffield United. But it's all about pace, isn't it, on the break? And Man City just couldn't deal with it, primarily Rashford.
Yeah, and against Tottenham as well. They started both of those games really, really well. And as you said, they looked unrecognisable from the team that had started against Aston Villa or Sheffield United. They went behind in both of those games. They drew them both. They got into a leading position in both. They failed to win. And at the start last week before the Tottenham game, I wrote quite strongly that 4 wins out of 14, whichever way you look at it, this isn't close to being good enough. No matter that the coaches think they've been unlucky with chances, 14 games in, 4 wins, it's not good enough. They really needed that win against Spurs. And probably the best I've seen Rashford play for a year or two. And they played well, United. They won the game. They won against a decent side. Not that it was Spurs' best performance, but to beat Spurs, to beat Mourinho, came back to Trafford, it's all for him to get his cold revenge. And then to go into the derby at City, the only Mancunian, a local boy. He'd done well at the Etihad before, but United were huge underdogs going into that match. And I spoke to several City fans before the game, and I found it hard to disagree with them. And yet the game started, whoosh, these fast counter-attacks, Rashford at the centre of it, ably supported by Dan James, putting lovely balls in. And Anthony Martial, very talented, but frustratingly inconsistent. And they tore City to shreds. I couldn't believe what I was watching in the first half an hour.
It was just wave of attack.
Oh, they were magnificent. And in the second half, City responded to that. But United defended very well. And had we spoken a week ago, I would never have predicted that. Because Ollie, and I spoke to yourselves the morning of the Spurs game when the mood was very despondent. And one thing I said was, he's got a habit of getting the result when he really needs a result. And he got it against Spurs. But that game against City was a surprise, and it was a huge bonus for United. And the mood has completely lifted. They're still way, way, way off the top. They're not going to be coming close to winning the league this year. But you can see more evidence of what Ole Gunnar's trying to do in bringing these players through. They've just got to become more consistent. But Rashford's form is the highlight among several others. Fred, midfielder, who's much maligned, he's been really well. And I don't just say that as your official Fred correspondent, because I seem to speak to him after every match. He's playing really, really well, and he didn't do last season. And with him, I think he had to do it this season, otherwise he'll be moved on. But he's been good. Aaron Wan-Bissaka was superb in the Manchester derby, and the team looked rejuvenated, and about time too.
Okay, so the league is a bit of a basket case this season, in that Man United were, I don't know, 12th or 13th very, very recently. Now they're up to 5th. And the performance they put in against Spurs and Manchester United, against Manchester City, no fluke whatsoever, because they were back-to-back, and the pace that they showed really, really troubled those teams. The problem is, how are they going to cope in games, we'll say, like the weekend upcoming, where they face Everton at home, and you'd imagine Everton are going to play a conservative game where they basically play defensively, men behind the ball, and kind of negate that influence of those players you mentioned. And is this going to be the acid test when they're playing weaker opposition or going to park the bus to an extent?
Yeah, it's all completely legitimate to say that. Ideally, Everton come out like they did the last time the two teams met in April, when Everton destroyed United 4-0 at Goodison Park. But it's not going to happen. Everton have got the worst record away from home in the league. No one's worse than them. They've won one of their 8 games away from home in the Premier League. And I was at Goodison a few weeks ago. I spoke to lots of people. It's been a terrible season for Everton. They expected to push for Europe, and they're in the relegation places before beating Chelsea at the weekend. But they've got Duncan Ferguson. We saw evidence of a rejuvenation there.
He's going to stay on for Sunday as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to expect them to come to Old Trafford and attack. Not that the record's bad in recent years. United have got to break down these sides. They've got to. They've got the attacking talent too. They're going to create the chances too. They've got to hold the nerve as well. And the tension doesn't need to rise when Manchester United haven't had the breakthrough. And that's been happening. You felt it inside Old Trafford. And that atmosphere transmits itself to the players, not just in the league, but in cup matches against Rochdale and Astana. You feel the pressure. People are thinking, why on earth are Manchester United not beating third division Rochdale? So the players, they've got to break through that. I think they are doing. I think they're unbeaten now in 9 home matches since the Palace defeat in August. There's a confidence there among the fans as well. The support for Ole Gunnar has never wavered inside the games. It has online, but at matches, and this is the big difference between United and Arsenal, where they've got problems too. The support for Ole Gunnar. That's not to say everybody's been delighted, because there hasn't, but there's been a surprising amount of support and patience inside Old Trafford. Now, he goes into the Everton game with people thinking, we're on a high again, got a relatively easy run of games. Watford are to follow, Newcastle, Burnley, but these are the games United have not been winning. He's got to put together the type of run he did when he came in a year ago to get United away from the mid-table position that you talked about and into a European position and maybe even pushing for the top 4. They've got the players to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at Chelsea's form of late, there's no reason whatever that they shouldn't be charging into the top four, or certainly trying. I want to talk to you about them defensively, because I thought some of Lindelof's defending, granted he made one crucial mistake in the second half, some of his defending, and obviously Maguire kind of alongside him, they really looked like they knew what they were doing against Manchester City. And to me, it was just a game that was absolutely laden with positives for Manchester United. Maybe midfield is still their biggest issue, but defensively, what have you made of them? They've obviously an amazingly good record up until the last game defensively as well in the Europa League.
Yeah, they started the season well defensively, and everybody was singing the praises of Maguire and Bissaka. I think Bissaka's had a very good season. Mm. And Lindelof. Lindelof really went off the boil for a month or two. And that contrasted with Chris Smalling being the best defender in Italy. And I went to see Chris in Rome, and he's loving it there. His confidence is up, and people were starting to say, ooh, Lindelof, it looks a bit... And even Maguire, before the win against Tottenham last week, he didn't escape some criticism. There've been issues at left back. Brandon Williams is the big plus there. Local boy come in, doing well, but still very young. Luke Shaw, 2 weeks ago, he wasn't in a good position regarding his future at Manchester United. People were saying he's had so many chances, Luke Shaw, and he had a stinking game in Astana away. But he did well in the derby match. Bissaka was one of the men of the matches. I asked Ole Gunnar after the game about Fred, and Ole Gunnar said man of the match. A lot of other people said it was Juan Bissaka. De Gea's doing okay. Not up to his super efforts at the start of the year when he had that magnificent game against Tottenham, but he set the bar very, very high for himself. But the defence in the last week has been decent. The problem has been throughout the season, they went 9 games without scoring more than one league goal. The goals are coming now. The confidence is back. That's running right through the team. And in midfield, it has been a weakness. Fred and Andres Pereira has been a weakness in the absence of Paul Pogba. But Scott McTominay has been doing very well alongside Fred. So maybe they've stumbled across that, because those two in the 4-2-3-1 have been very effective. And even Jesse Lingard has come into form as well. And he was a player completely written off by a lot of United fans. And I remember writing a piece about him in August ahead of the game at Southampton, saying there would be no complaints if Jesse Lingard was dropped. And he was dropped. And that piece went massive. So he'd used up a lot of the patience of United fans in the summer, as much for what he did off the field with his stupid social media antics. He's had a very good week as well, and he's been playing well too, and I think he deserves credit for that.
Speaking of social media antics, I put it to you, Andy Mitten, that if Paul Pogba were fit as of now, Solskjaer would probably view this as some sort of a qualified positive.
Yeah, because Paul Pogba was a brilliant football player, and the team have learned to play without him. But a fit Paul Pogba playing behind the attackers, the idea of that excites me. What doesn't excite me is that Paul Pogba has long wanted to leave Manchester United. United do not want to sell him. But it's a difficult situation with him. What do you do with a player who wants to leave? And then if the club decided to let him go, they're going to want top money for him. Who's got that type of money? There's not a huge list of clubs waiting to pay the sort of money which A, Manchester United would want, and B, Paul Pogba would want. So, difficult situation. To be fair to Paul, he's professional when he's around the club. The club think his issues, they're not delighted with the issue, with the conduct of his agent. They think he's trying to manoeuvre him away to get another big payday. And it's not an ideal situation, because Paul is also a big influence in the dressing room. So if you look at Anthony Martial, he really looks up to Paul Pogba. So he's looking up to someone who wants to leave the club. I'm not going to dress it up and say it's ideal, because it isn't. What is better is that the team have learned to play without Paul Pogba. From Pogba's perspective, he might feel that he was sold a dream that hasn't materialised when United came in for him in 2016 and said, we're going to rebuild the team around you. The team have been pretty disappointing since then. Jose Mourinho has moved on. Paul Pogba was happy about that, a bit too happy when he put that social media post out celebrating the fact that Mourinho had been sacked. But When he plays well, which he doesn't do as often as he should do, Pogba is a fantastic player. He's got everything. And one thing he's got, which the other players have not got, is that ability to deal with the ball in tight spaces, to tackle, to or just the confidence to get out of it. There's no other players who've got that at Manchester United. And he was a top scorer last year. He's a world-class player. He's proved that. But we haven't always seen it at Manchester United.
What's quite intriguing is their next set of fixtures, if you're to ignore the League Cup and Europa League. They play Everton at home, Watford away, Newcastle at home, Burnley away. That's their next four, the next set of four games, followed by Arsenal away, which at the moment looks very winnable, and Norwich City at home. So Solskjaer will be looking at that half dozen games and saying, if we could guess, for argument's sake, 13, 14, 15, maybe even more points from those six games. Is anyone talking about Pochettino anymore?
No, they're not. They were talking about him a little bit before the Spurs game, but who was talking about him? Fans? Not really. Journalists? Maybe. The journalists can't write with any authority about the mood if the fans are behind Solskjaer, and they have been behind Solskjaer. And you mentioned Arsenal. I was at Arsenal last week. And the mood was poisonous inside the stadium. There's a civil war among the fans there between fans who think you should get behind the team and other fans who think it's their right to moan, to complain, to go on a fan channel and vent their spleen after the match. You're not getting that in real life at Old Trafford. Pochettino has been flavoured a month a couple of times. Certainly would have been the preferred option when Jose Mourinho's time was coming to the end. But he was at Tottenham and made it clear that he wasn't going to leave Tottenham. He took him to the European Cup final. It's all about timing in football. As you said, and as I said earlier, that run of games now is crucial. It's all right turning it on in the biggest games. It's fantastic in so many ways. But you've got to be beating the smaller teams if you're Manchester United. And they haven't been doing that this season. They've been going to Bournemouth, to Southampton, to Wolverhampton, and coming away with a point or nothing, certainly not a win. And it hasn't been good enough. Going to Newcastle away, that was probably the low point of this season, and playing appallingly and losing. They've got to start winning. For United, you've got to get a thread of consistency to be pushing you up the table, to be finishing in the top four. Because if you don't, you're going to be finishing outside the top four.
Finally, how surprised would you be if they finished above Manchester City this season?
I'd be surprised. I just wouldn't. I think mentally you prepare yourself for how the league's going to finish, and I'm slowly coming to terms with the fact that Liverpool might win the title for the first time.
Stronger than might.
Since the Middle Ages, and they're obviously...
Since the plague, I think, yeah.
And they've got a brilliant manager, and this is their moment now. And I might form the Flamengo Supporters Club Manchester branch ahead of the World Cup Championship in the next few weeks. But I watched Liverpool, they're brilliant at the moment. And you know the European champions, you might have heard the fans go on about it a little bit. But City, they've wobbled. And I spoke to people close to City last week, and they just said, it just happens in sport sometimes. There's not this big reason for it beyond the fact that Vincent Kompany's gone and they were missing Aguero and Laporte. You miss some of your best players, you're going to suffer. As we stand at the moment, I think if Manchester United can push for fourth, that would be very, very encouraging. But I said exactly the same thing when Solskjaer came in a year ago and the team were 8 points off fourth. But if they can get a thread of consistency, which they've not been able to do. Saturday was the first time that they've won consecutive Premier League matches all season. But if they can carry on and carry on improving, get the wins which they should be getting, then who knows? But in my mind, I'm thinking fifth, sixth. I think it's really important that they win one of the Cups, the League Cup, the FA Cup. The Europa League was really good for Manchester United 2 years ago, not least because they went to really interesting places along the way. They could win that, and I think it would be very difficult. But if they can win that, then that gets them back into the Champions League. Manchester United have got to be playing European football next season, even if it's only the Europa League.
Andy Mitten, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Andrew, welcome back. It is 13 minutes to 9 to 10 o'clock, so we're getting to the full times in the Champions League. No Troy Parrott for Tottenham Hotspur, who are losing 3-1 in a game that Bayern Munich, Damo, have absolutely dominated.
Yeah, second half, they've gone to town on him. I think the reason he brought on Wanyama, probably twofold really, looks like he's maybe looking at reintegrating him to the team, maybe getting him a little bit fitter to get minutes in it. But I think ultimately, I think Jose's happy with 3-1.
Yeah, he's...
I think that at the minute, if, you know, he brought him on with 10 minutes to go, and I think if Spurs knocked off, Bayern are quite capable of attacking on another 2 or 3, and then they're going home with a 5 or 6-1 defeat. So I think he brought Wanyama on just to shore it up and just fill any gaps so it doesn't turn in...
3-1.
Yeah, I mean, 3-1, you can justify going home. Ah, we had a good go. We were decent enough in the first half. We were competitive. Okay, second half, we went out of it. It's fine. But if it ended up 5 or 6, you know, there's huge recriminations for there. So... you know, maybe it wasn't the night for a Troy Parrott to be coming on.
True or false, there is no outstanding team in Europe at the moment?
Liverpool for me.
So what chance do you give Bayern to win in the Champions League?
I don't think they will win the Champions League. They haven't got a manager yet. So depends which route they're going to go or who they take in. You might see something along the lines of what Ajax did last year. You know, a real outsider, make a good run for it. You know, maybe an Atalanta or someone, you know. That is way out there, definitely, because they only qualify with 7 points.
Ah, oh, Spurs got a score there. Is that Son?
Son, yeah.
True on goal. Here's
Christian Eriksen just went into a tackle, which I think is the first time I've seen him do that in about 6 months.
He just looks either... Like, the Eriksen there now, he's basically losing control almost of the ball.
Yeah, look, pressure. I mean, he sees three players coming. I mean, he's aging to sat at home with a rosary bead right now, you know, praying that he doesn't get injured and not watching games. So,
did you have a rosary bead in your house as a kid?
Yeah, I think everyone did, didn't I? You know, empty holy water thing on the front door.
A friend of mine, his dad passed away recently, and they used to say the rosary every night. We were kind of Catholic, but we weren't quite as much into it as some of the neighbours, but... that Ireland is kind of dying away now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Much, no?
Yeah, I think it's finished.
I'm in a secular state. We did get a text in on Pogba. Pogba is a May Fainer. He's no interest in being there. Rashford, the next Ronaldo. Give me a break. Andy Mitten is deluded if he thinks Ollie is going to change that team around. A great time for Andy, by the way, but he's mistaken thinking they're going to compete in the next few years. And that's Paul and Kilkenny.
I concur.
Paul, the Pogba situation is obviously... I don't know. He's a player that I love him as a player. I wouldn't like him as a character in terms of his, you know, he's erratic. He down tools under Mourinho.
He's not a leader. He's not a guy that's going to be first out of the trenches leading the charge. I've said this before. He's a joiner inner. If things are going well, he'll join in and he'll do well. If he's a player that's in a good squad and a good team with real good characters and real good leaders, he'll kind of row in with them and he'll kind of ride that little kind of wave with them. But if you're expecting him to be like, you know, Brian Robson type midfield player, then you're sadly mistaken. So either United understand that and start putting a squad in and around him, or they just cut him loose. But I think maybe he wants to be cut loose now at the minute because he can't see Man United being competitive in England, let alone in Europe, anytime soon. I'd say he's massively disillusioned with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I mean, I can't imagine him going into work every day thinking this guy's definitely turning this around. You know, I know you, earlier in the show there you called it a resurgence for United. I mean, they've won two games.
They've won two games, yeah.
There's every chance to go lose to Norwich or whoever they're playing on the weekend.
It is. It's Everton at home, yeah. We'll wrap up the scores shortly, but Tottenham did lose 3-1, no Troy Parrott. Mourinho looks relatively untroubled. The one thing you would say though, Damo, is if they've played two decent teams since he's joined them and they've been poor in both games and they've lost 2-1 at Man United and they were well beaten tonight. Now, I know it didn't matter, but they were still well beaten.
Yeah, that's true. But I think Jose's still figuring out the Spurs team. I don't think he's entirely happy with the goalkeeper. I watched that Coutinho goal back 3 or 4 times. Like, his footwork is poor. Gazzaniga's.
Yeah.
If you watch him as the shot's coming in, he plants his feet very, very early and literally is kind of stuck a flag in the room and go, this is where I am, now I'm going to die for it. I think a Lloris there takes an extra step to get that extra 6 inches that he's looking for to get it around the post. If you watch in slow motion, you'll see what I mean. He plants his feet very, very early, and he hasn't got the reach of a 6-7 goalkeeper, you know, that can get away with that. So I think a goalkeeper, a centre-back...
They need a goalkeeper.
I think they do, yeah. But how big do they go? I mean, when's Lloris due back? Mm-hmm. Because if they go big with a goalkeeper, it could be the end of Lloris. I don't know. There's a lot of things there. But Jose would have known all these problems before he took the job. So I presume they've got a plan. Him and Levy have definitely got a plan going forward. They're a little bit lightweight in midfield. Dyer's lack of mobility is really hurting him, even though he's a strong presence in the middle of the park. I was watching him tonight. He can't run anymore. I mean, he really is. Either he's injured or he's past it. I'm not really sure. But he can't run anymore. When Yama came on, he's a possibility. He looks like a Jose-type player.
Disciplined,
strong, you know, physical, can deal with the ball under pressure. But Jose would have known every single issue that he's facing before he took the job.
Who's the best goalkeeper you've played with?
God, I don't know, man, if I'm being honest, yeah. Julian Speroni at Palace was
I'd say he was a bit of a character, was he?
He wasn't, surprisingly. No, not at all. Yeah.
The get up of him.
You think he was? He's not at all. Very devoted family man, you know. He's one of those guys, if he was in training after an hour and someone said, "Where's Jules?" he'd be like, "Oh yeah, where is Jules?" You know, one of them kind of fellas, yeah, you know. Yeah. Just came in, went about his business and went home. Lovely guy to talk to, but, you know, it was always a very serious conversation with him, you know. You'd never get, you know, a good joke out of him or anything.
Like, who was the character in that dressing room then, at that time? Like, who was the mad lad?
People like Joe Ledley.
Right.
Joe Ledley was a funny guy. Wayne Hennessy, the goalkeeper at the minute, he's a funny character, him. I mean, he just, two good lads. Them two Welsh boys together, you know, they were a bit daft, the pair of them.
Welsh are a good bunch of lads. Yeah. Full times, Olympiacos are 1-0 up against Red Star Belgrade. That's not over yet. Dinamo Zagreb 1, Man City 4, Shakhtar Donetsk 0, Atlanta 3. Atlanta qualifying for the first time after getting into the Champions League for the first time itself. Club Brugge 1, Real Madrid 3, PSG 5, Galatasaray 0, Bayern Munich 3, Tottenham 1. Not a full time yet in Olympiacos v Red Star Belgrade. Atletico 2, Lokomotiv Moscow 0, and Bayer Leverkusen 0, Juventus 2. So that actually wraps up the group stages of the Champions League. Couldn't get too excited about it so far. Like, obviously there were some games of some kind of significance tonight. Juve and Atletico Madrid qualifying from that group, but it's been pretty dead so far.
You know what, man? I'm looking at Juventus now, and I just can't help but feel that they're building to something. You know, they're quietly going under the radar. You know, people are saying, "Oh, there's issues with Ronaldo, it's not quite right, Sarri's this and that," but I just can't help feel that they've realised, you know, we need to be peaking in March, and I think that's the route they're going with the size of the squad they have. They're rotating, they're winning games, they're going along nicely. They qualified tonight with 16 points. I know they're second in the league to Inter, but they still have an impressive points tally. It's just Inter have matched them this year. So, I mean, I just can't help but think with the size of their squad that they'll be hitting peak form in February, March, April.
There's life in the old lady, yes. Thanks for coming in.
Brilliant, Johnny, thanks.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.